Hello, Susan. Love, are you
Talk
there?
Radio.
I am here.
I can never tell what they're going to do at the beginning of this. No? Are you there? Hello, Susan.
I am here.
Woo! I can never tell what they're going to do at the beginning here.
I know. It's hard to tell. Here we are. I am here, and you are here. Hi, Justine. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
We're so glad to be with you again for another Tuesday night blog talk here with Susan Weed, seeing if we can help answer some questions here. Do we have
There's
any questions tonight?
Line. Oh,
and we have a guest tonight later on, don't we?
Yes, we do. At 9 o'clock, we have Emily Ruff, who's going to come in and speak with you for half an hour.
She is the director of the Florida School of Herbal Studies, so we're really excited
to... Holistic Living.
Yeah, School of Holistic Living. Very excited to have Emily Ruff. She'll be with us from 9 to 9:30, so we have all that time in between now and 9 o'clock to answer your questions.
Wonderful. I have someone on the line.
Okay,
Hello.
Let's find out what they want to know.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
We certainly can. There are
Yay.
No guys in the room, but we can hear you.
Right.
We're all, at least
We're all
Susan
girls.
And I are women.
that makes three of us.
Good.
Go ahead.
I'm 3 months pregnant, and I have a 4-centimeter fibroid in the interior of my uterus, and it's growing, not rapidly, but preterm labor is obviously a concern with something growing, taking up space along with the baby. So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions on natural things I can do to treat it during pregnancy.
Do you have my book down there?
I don't. I have heard of it, though.
Okay. Well, I have an entire chapter on fibroids.
Oh.
And a lot of suggestions for working with those fibroids. And as part of that chapter, I actually have a box called Fibroids and Pregnancy.
Ah.
So let me just read this. This is from page 222 of Down There, The Wise Woman Way, in Pelvic Health Handbook. Babies born to women with fibroids are not more likely to have birth defects or to die. For the majority of women, fibroids have no influence over the health of the pregnancy or the baby. Fibroids present at the beginning of a pregnancy may or may not grow as the pregnancy progresses. If they grow, it is a problem only 10% of the time. Fibroids shrink after birth. Women with small fibroids are more likely to have miscarriage or preterm labor than women with larger fibroids. 90% of women with fibroids deliver at full time, full term.
Now,
so although there certainly is a consideration about preterm labor, since you have a fibroid that is larger rather than smaller, that is less of a consideration, interestingly enough. And even when it is a consideration, it is a consideration only about 10% of the time.
Which is good.
Now,
my doctor did say mine is in a really bad spot. It's kind of like right inside the entrance.
Right by your cervix.
Right. So it's dilating. Earlier is a concern, I guess, if this thing keeps growing like it is.
Uh-huh. And how much has it grown since the pregnancy?
At a month and a half in, it was 3 centimeters. So in the last month and a half, it's grown 1 centimeter. So it was at one point twice the size of the baby.
Centimeter is not very much.
No. It sounded big.
I mean, from the way you were talking, I thought maybe it had doubled in size.
Well, we actually just found out today that it hadn't, but up until this
point, not at
thought,
all.
Yeah.
So, again, I in general have found that if I go tearing about and changing things, that half the time I was wrong to have changed that. Have you ever found that in your life?
Yeah, yeah. Just let things play,
so,
of course.
So in each chapter, because there's so much information in each one of these chapters and down there, I have a little help box. So let's read the help box.
Okay.
For uterine fibroids. This is on page 219. It says, take a dropper full of Vitex or saw palmetto tincture 2 to 4 times a day. Investigate acupuncture. Listen to your uterus. What is it saying? Drink 2 to 3 quarts of nettle and raspberry leaf infusion weekly. So, certainly, drinking nourishing herbal infusions during pregnancy is a really good idea. Are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions right now?
Well, I thought I wasn't supposed to be doing herbal stuff during pregnancy. And that's the thing. I've looked up some natural fibroid remedies.
Excuse me just a second. Are you telling me you're eating no fruits and no vegetables?
I am eating lots of vegetables. I just...
Well, vegetables or herbs?
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about it that way.
You have just made a really idiotic...
I know, it's true.
...demarcation now, haven't you?
Yeah, I just... So many of the baby books,
it's
I know...
It's totally and completely senseless and only leaving you at risk. Do you have my book, Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year?
No, but I feel like I should.
Well, of course you should. Obviously need to have both of these books.
So I hope
and in the Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, you know, somebody said to me, well, I can't believe that you are writing an herbal for women who are pregnant. I mean, shouldn't pregnant women avoid herbs?
Oh, I agree that we should be doing
and
it. But
I said, well... I said that, gosh, you know, let me check that out and see. And so there is a list, and let me read this list to you of things
okay.
to avoid before and during pregnancy. Avoid
okay.
smoking.
Yes.
Avoid alcohol, including beer and wine. Avoid raw or undercooked meat. Avoid radiation from X-rays, video terminals, and other sources of X-rays like at airports. Avoid caffeine in coffee, black tea, colas, and mate. Avoid aspirin. Avoid taking antihistamine drugs or herbs that are strongly antihistamine, like ephedra. Avoid drug laxatives and any laxative herb, like senna, aloes, castor oil, turkey rhubarb, buckthorn, or cascara sagrada. Avoid antacids. Avoid diuretic drugs and herbs that are strong diuretics, like buchu or juniper berries. Avoid physohex or anything else containing hexachlorophene. Avoid hair dyes. Avoid hemorrhoid medications sold over the counter. Avoid chemical stimulants and depressants, including psychotropics, phenobarbital, barbiturates, and tranquilizers. Avoid motion sickness or anti-nausea drugs, including Bendectin. Avoid epinephrine or adrenaline shots. Avoid sulfa drugs and antibiotics. Avoid vaccines, anesthetics, and mercury vapor in the dentist's office. Avoid steroids and herbs that are strongly steroidal, like ginseng, licorice, hops, and sage. So far out of this long, long, long list, and I'm not done, how many herbs have I actually mentioned?
Only a very, very few.
There are certainly things we need to avoid during pregnancy. Avoid hormones like birth control pills. Avoid Accutane, which is an acne medication. Avoid vitamin supplements, especially supplements containing vitamin A, vitamin C, or vitamin D. Avoid heavy metals, lead, nickel, cadmium, manganese, and because of the mercury in tuna, avoid or severely limit the amount of tuna fish you eat. Avoid pesticides, herbicides, and insecticides. Avoid fumes from paints, thinners, solvents, wood preservatives, varnishes, glues, spray adhesives, benzene, dry cleaning fluids, plastics, vinyl chloride, rubber, and toluene. Avoid lithium and arsenic. Avoid contact with cat feces and avoid polychlorinated biphenyls, which are PCBs. So that is the list of things that you need to avoid during pregnancy. And as we can see, if we single out herbs, we are really making a mistake, aren't we?
True. I didn't know which herbs I could take during pregnancy. So nettle, raspberry leaf tea, And the first two that you mentioned, I only half got it written down. Vitex was one of them.
Well, let me just say I didn't say tea.
Oh.
I said infusion.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Tea is a small amount of fresh or dried herb brewed for a short time. An infusion is 1 ounce by weight of dried herb, never fresh, brewed in 1 quart of boiling water for 4 to 8 hours.
Okay, great. I didn't know that.
You can.
I'm at the start of this journey. Thank you so much.
You can find YouTubes of me making nourishing herbal infusions.
Okay.
And, of course, in all of my books, I do describe in great detail how to make a nourishing herbal infusion. But, yes, you would weigh out 1 ounce of dried nettle, put it in a quart jar, bring a quart of water to a boil, pour it into the jar, put a lid on it. I usually make mine last thing at night and simply let it sit overnight. The next morning, then straining it out, squeezing the nettle to get all of the liquid out of it, and then refrigerating the liquid that you have. I'm drinking nettle infusion right now, as a matter of fact. I drink anywhere from 4 to 6 cups of infusion every single day, and I've been doing that for over 30 years.
So it's nettle infusion. That's the correct thing.
Nettle infusion. Justine, I think you drank infusion when you were pregnant.
Yes. I did. I drank infusion throughout my entire pregnancy, before my pregnancy, after, and
great,
and so forth.
Oh, well, I will be one of them too soon.
Good. As a matter of fact, I teach at midwifery schools all over the world and advise them not only to have the pregnant women drink nourishing herbal infusions, but for them to drink the infusions too.
That's great.
One of the mainstay ways to be healthy and to stay healthy. And nettle leaf and raspberry leaf are wonderful for pregnant women. And rather than mixing them, just alternate them. So have nettle for a day or two and then raspberry for a day or two.
Okay, I will do that. And I will be paying it forward to the other pregnant women as well. That's wonderful.
Wonderful. And the first two herbs.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
You can go to nourishingherbalinfusions.com, and you can learn a lot there as well. That's a website that Susan has, and she has a free online course at the Wise Woman University called Nourishing Herbal Infusions. And if you go to wisewomanbookshop.com, type in infusions or nourishing in a keyword up there, or go to the Wise Woman University tab, you will find Nourishing Herbal Infusions online course, which is a completely free course offered by Susan.
Okay.
And Susan, I would like to keep these calls 15 minutes each tonight since we have other people who are waiting, and also we have the interview at 9 o'clock. Are you comfortable with that?
I am. I would just like to answer her question about Vitex and saw palmetto.
I didn't.
Go ahead.
I don't think I've ever heard of those, though. Sorry.
That's okay. Vitex is also called chaste berries or chaste tree berries. And it is considered safe to take even during pregnancy. And what I usually ask pregnant women to do is to meditate on the plant. And to get, again, a sense, remember, one of the things was, what is your uterus saying to you? And find out from your uterus, would this be something that would be good for me? And saw palmetto is an herb usually thought of as useful for men, but a daily dropperful of saw palmetto tincture for women alleviates cystitis, shrinks enlarged ovaries, eases irritation of the uterus and ovaries, prevents preterm labor, and shrinks fibroids.
Great. Much better than all the medical stuff.
Yeah, so again, I think that probably the clearest thing to say to you is that herbs are not drugs with green coats on unless we treat them way by powdering them and putting them in capsules, And nothing that I have mentioned tonight has been anything that we are going to powder or put in a capsule. And because you're going to be taking it either in a water-based form or tincture form, the first guardian of your health, the tongue, will be right there telling you if something doesn't taste good or it doesn't feel right, certainly don't take it, don't drink it, okay?
Okay. Thank you for what you
Righty.
Do.
Righty. Green blessings. Good night.
I wanted to mention also that the nourishing herbal infusions are not only good for the mother, but also for the partner.
Oh, okay.
And who will also need that extra energy, certainly. and I wanted to mention that as soon as my child was, I think, almost not even 4 months old, she was drinking the infusions with us. Oat straw.
Amazing.
Red clover, nettle, comfrey, each simple. So these are really foods, as Susan was saying. I feel completely safe having my four-month-old child drink these infusions with me.
Oh, I can't wait to start. Thank you so much.
Have a great night.
Thank you again.
Good night. Green blessings.
In the 202 area code, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Would you like to ask me a question? Go right ahead.
Yes, I would love to. Thank you. I have discovered the nettle infusions from you, and wow, I've been doing it for about a month, and I have so much energy, and it's totally awesome. But I wanted to ask you, somewhere along the way I heard maybe nettles is a coagulant as opposed to an anticoagulant. And I'm just curious if you could speak to that, first of all, if there would be any concerns. I once upon a time took a baby aspirin every day, and I stopped that. But I do tend to have a high platelet count, that's why I was curious about that.
You know, I this is wonderful because it's kind of going along the same thing that we were just talking about, that herbs are not drugs with green coats on. So let's be a little clearer about what a drug is. Now, if we're going to make a drug from a plant, what we do is we isolate one part of the plant, and then we concentrate and purify so that we have just that one thing. It's often called the active ingredient from the plant. So there's a shrub, spirea, and ah means from. So aspirin is from spirea. Aspirin was originally made by this process of isolation, concentration, and purification from spirea. Nowadays, we tend to make aspirin and other drugs from basically petroleum, from the soup of hydrocarbons that petroleum gives us, because it's a little easier to do it than trying to extract it from a plant. Rather than extracting it from a plant, we just have this soup of hydrocarbons, and we can kind of pull out of there the specific molecule that we want. So a drug is a single molecule with a direction of action. If I give you a drug that is a blood thinner, it is going to thin your blood, whether you want it or not, whether it's healthy for you or not, that's what it's going to do. It's a drug. It has a direction of action. If we look at plants, though, we see that plants are conglomerates of hundreds of different constituents, many of which act in an absolutely contrary fashion. So that you can have, for instance, hawthorn, which raises low blood pressure and lowers high blood pressure. Herbs don't have a direction of action because they're not drugs. They are not isolated, purified, concentrated substances. They are conglomerations. So we could say anything about nettle and have it probably be at least a little bit true. However, so long as you are using nettle, the plant, in a water base, then your body itself, with its wisdom, is going to determine which of the many, many, many constituents in nettle it wants and needs to use, and will use those to your betterment. Does that make any sense to you?
It does, and that's very reassuring. That's great. You know, I used to think I was healthy till I discovered drinking nettles.
It's what,
so now I want to drink it every day. Yeah, I tried oat straw, and I just the taste didn't do it for me, so I don't know if I should be rotating or what.
Over ice?
I just infuse it and then drink it, but you think for the oat straw it should be over ice?
I think infusions at room temperature are about as nasty as it gets.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
If I had to drink nettle at room temperature, I would never, ever, ever drink it.
Well, you know what, though? You do kind of get addicted to the taste. At first, I thought, oh, my God,
well, I love all the infusions over.
Now I look forward to it.
And many people love them really hot with a little honey in them or really hot with some salt in them. But, yes, I really do think rotation is better than just drinking one every single day.
One. Okay.
I don't even think the same exercise every single day is healthy.
Right. Well, that's what
right?
I mean. Variety is absolutely the thing to do.
Variety
with food in general.
Is one of the keystones of health. So we don't really
right.
want to be drinking nettle every single day. I do understand. And there is
yeah.
kind of a, you know, when you start drinking it, you just feel so good. But after
right.
a while, you know, then you start moving into rotating through them. Did you try red clover?
No, I haven't tried that one yet. I will.
You will like red clover quite a lot.
Okay.
And have you tried comfrey leaf or linden?
I have comfrey. I haven't tried it yet. And obviously,
so remember, it has to be dried, not fresh.
Yeah, uh-huh. I have the dried. It's organic
right.
from the United States. So
good. And then
so,
linden, and do use just half an ounce of linden. And
okay.
so I think you'll be able to create a nice rotation for yourself.
Great. Okay. So, so there's nettles, oats. Yeah, oh, whatever it is, and then red clover, comfrey, and linden, half an ounce of linden.
Half an ounce of linden. Those are my five major infusions that I work with. Violet leaf is a wonderful nourishing herbal infusion. Hawthorn leaves and flowers are a wonderful nourishing herbal infusion. My friend Robin Rose Bennett makes a rose hip infusion. I've also had hawthorn berry infusion, quite nice. Sometimes I make mullein infusion. One of my past apprentices made chickweed infusion, one of her regulars. Any non-aromatic herb that is rich in vitamins and minerals can be used to make an infusion.
Great.
Well, we were just talking to a pregnant woman about raspberry leaf infusion. I personally don't like raspberry leaf very much, but since I'm not pregnant, I'm not ever going to get pregnant again. That's okay.
How about horsetail? Is that also one?
I would not make an infusion of horsetail, no. It would be
okay.
far too strong. If I wanted to use horsetail, I would put a pinch of it in with any one of my other herbal infusions.
Oh, got it. Okay, great. And I've been adding a little bit of the slippery elm bark just because I do find nettles to be a little drying. My skin's a little drier than it used to be, so I'm thinking nettles might be drying me out a little bit.
No, it's not.
Okay.
There is nothing of any kind about nettle that is drying.
Okay. Uh-huh. So I shouldn't worry about having to add something to it. Is there any benefit
I would not add anything.
Okay.
If you want to eat some slippery elm, I would eat it with my grains.
Okay. Got it. Wonderful. I think that's, you know, and I think what you're saying is this would be very valuable to people no matter what conditions they have or, you know, anybody. I should be giving it to my husband. I should be giving it to my kids. Somebody who's generally got maybe adrenal fatigue could benefit from this.
I really do believe that all people thrive when they drink nourishing herbal infusions. I really have seen really amazing things happen to people drinking nourishing herbal infusions, and not because they were out to make these things happen, but because they just happened. for instance, complete reversal of severe osteoporosis, people getting off of their depression medication. All kinds of amazing things happening from people simply drinking their nourishing herbal
Wonderful.
Infusions at least 5 quarts a week.
And even somebody maybe recovering from Lyme disease would benefit from this because they, you know, that would be another, you know, many medical situations where it would benefit. It seems better than a multivitamin supplement, for instance.
I completely and totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, for a great many years, I've been telling people to wrap their vitamin and mineral supplements up in pretty paper, tie it with a bow, and give it to somebody they don't like much. And drink
that.
Nourishing herbal infusions instead. I have not taken any pill, any supplement of any kind in over 30 years.
That's great. I'm definitely throwing away my multivitamin. And it's funny.
Well, as I said, you can always wrap them up and give them to someone you don't like very much.
Right. When I take vitamin D, I'm a rare person. I get a headache from taking vitamin D3 that everybody's supposed to take. And I think nettles and all these herbs have vitamin D3 in them, don't they?
Nettle does contain some vitamin D3. It is correct.
Yeah. Okay, great.
And your skin, of course, makes vitamin D from the sun. So long as you're not wearing sunscreen.
Yeah. Right.
Thank
Great.
You so much for calling.
Thank you.
Really, really
Thank
appreciate
you so
it.
Much. I appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
Green blessings. Good night.
Thank you.
Hey there, Susan. Can you hear me now, Susan?
Oh, I can just barely hear you.
You cannot hear me?
Now I can.
Okay, great. okay, so I have someone who wrote in who would like to have an answer here. Let me read it to you. Thank you for doing the podcast. I'm usually bathing children and other evening activities during your live show, and I'm thrilled to hear your voices with the ability to rewind and repeat. I would like to ask you about nourishing herbs for thyroid. I've developed a goiter postpartum. I am nurturing both of my children with baby-led weaning and have not stopped breastfeeding for nearly 4 years. Also, could you share your opinion on using neem and or turmeric as a birth spacing method? My husband and I would like to space them 3 years apart again. We are seeking a breastfeeding-compatible natural method as my menses have not returned yet and did not for 22 months last time. Additionally, you made a comment about vaccinations in goats. Could you please elaborate your thoughts on them? Thank you so much. I look to you as a grandmother.
Thank you. I'm very, very honored to be given that place. So in new menopausal years, the Wise Woman Way, there is a chapter on thyroid. And I actually encourage people to get all of my books, even if you're in the middle of childbearing year and you think, well, I don't want that menopause book. You'll actually find that there's a lot of things right at that point, like there's a chapter on fibroids and so on. And did she specifically say hyperthyroid or hypothyroid? Did she say low thyroid?
Let's see, it said here, I need nourishing herbs for thyroid. I've developed a goiter postpartum.
Okay, so a goiter basically develops because the diet is lacking in iodine. And it's one of the reasons that we put iodine in salt. And there is not necessarily iodine in sea salt. Many people think because it says sea salt that there's iodine in it. And actually, there has been quite some concern with the turn from regular table salt to sea salt among many people that there will be goiters developing among these people. So one way to get iodine is to start using regular iodized salt that you can get at the supermarket. Another way, of course, is to use more seaweed. And I like a kombu. I like wakame. I like Nereocystis kelp. The kelps the wakame, the kombu, the nereosis, the kelps are the highest in iodine except for bladderwrack. And bladderwrack, which is also a fucus, is one of the strongest of the iodine-rich herbs, and it increases levels of thyroid hormone. It tastes pretty strong, and it acts really strongly, too. And on page 55 in New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, I talked about a protocol for using fucus. And then just last month, someone wrote in and said that she was just making an infusion. She put 1 ounce of dried fucus in a quart jar, filled it to the top with boiling water, let it steep overnight, and she says, I don't even have to strain it. And then she drinks that as sip by sip throughout the day as much as she can. So sometimes it takes her several days to get through her quart of fucus, but she gets it all down. And that by doing this, just by continually, you know, this is one place where we would want to do it every single day, unlike what we were just talking about when I said, oh, variety is wonderful. In this case, she was just doing it day after day, and she had already been taking thyroid hormone medication for 2 years, and she was able to completely get off of her medication, and her thyroid completely normalized from using the fucus. Remember that any raw cabbage family plants push down the action of the thyroid. I always say to people, cabbage family plants are great so long as they are cooked. If you're at a party, avoid the crudités, no raw broccoli, no raw cauliflower, no raw cabbage. As a matter of fact, they contribute directly to the formation of a goiter because they interfere with the body's ability to uptake iodine. So if you're eating seaweed to get more iodine and you're eating any raw cabbage family plants at the same time, it's kind of like one hand smacking the other around, right? What else can we say? Adrenal exhaustion can sometimes be at the root of thyroid problems. And, of course, nettle leaf infusion is a fabulous way to feed your thyroid and get those goiters to shrink. Nettle seed is a thyroid tonic. And so is red clover infusion. So those are a few things that you can do at this point to help your thyroid. The second part of your question was my thoughts about using neem or turmeric as a means of birth control or as a means of preventing your menses from coming on. Turmeric is a food, and it is widely used in food. And so long as you are using it in food, I see no problem of any kind. If, however, you're considering putting it in capsules and taking it, I think that would be a problem and would not be safe to do while you are breastfeeding, or not something that I would feel comfortable with you doing while you are breastfeeding. I do not have a lot of experience with the use of turmeric. But I do have a lot of experience with the use of herbs and capsules, and the results are almost always just horrible. Neem, I'm wondering what you're referring to. Are you referring to neem leaf? Turmeric is kind of an item of commerce, and even though it grows in India and tropical places, it is pretty easily available. But neem leaf is not very easily available and is not an item of commerce, making me think that perhaps you're talking about neem essential oil, which is very easily available. All essential oils in any form should be absolutely avoided and while we are breastfeeding and while we are pregnant. As a matter of fact, for good health, I avoid all essential oils every single day of my life. So if you're just talking about the neem leaves, I'm not sure where you're getting them. I couldn't really tell you anything about it because I have absolutely no experience of any kind with that. You might, however, want to visit Robin Rose Bennett's website. And I always say, that's Bennett with two N's and two T's. And she says, there's two E's in there, too. I said, yes, but they're separated. B-E-N-N-E-T-T, Robin Rose Bennett. And she was an apprentice of mine, is a dear friend of mine, is a wonderful herbal teacher, trains apprentices, has a great book out of the Green Witch Herbal Guidebook, and has taken on, since she left her apprenticeship over 20 years ago, working with her green ally, Wild Carrot, and has championed the use of wild carrot seed for birth control. So check out what Robin Rose is doing and consider using wild carrot seed. I personally would feel far more comfortable with you using wild carrot seed than you're using turmeric or neem in any form. And since I guess it's important always to mention the obvious way that most Indigenous people space their children 3 years apart is by not having any sexual intercourse during that time. That is highly effective and completely safe.
Thank you. She also would like you to recommend a music and book about the goddess.
Well, what comes to my mind immediately, of course, is my CD, It's Time, Goddess Chants.
Uh-huh.
And the CDs by Lisa Thiel, many of which are Goddess Chants, and the CDs by Marie Summerwood. And I believe these are all available at thewisewomanbookshop.com.
Absolutely true. Okay.
And Goddess on Earth is an exquisite and very expensive photography book on goddesses. And then other than that, there are a great many other wonderful, wonderful books. Actually, one of the ones that's coming to mind is Kali, The Eternal Force. It's a fairly old book, but it's really excellent.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Z Budapest.
All of Z Budapest books, which are also available at wisewomanbookshop.com.
Yep. So there's two more people here who have called in and are waiting to ask a question. So I'm gonna put the one on and then know in your mind that there's another person who's also waiting as well. Okay, Susan?
Okay. Okay.
The person in the 262 area code, would you like to ask Susan a question?
Yes, I would.
Go right ahead.
Hello, Susan. I'm wondering if you have had any experience with treating a condition called lichen sclerosis?
Yes.
And
I am a big fan of comfrey leaf. As a matter of fact, I was at a very big conference, the International Herb Symposium, just this past weekend. There were about 800 people there. And toward the end of the workshop, someone came up and took my hand and she said, "My gosh, your hand is so wonderfully resilient and yet soft and but strong. My goodness, what kind of a hand cream do you use?" And I laughed. I said, "Well, you know, I've been teaching a lot of down there classes. I go around at the down there classes and I let people feel my hand. And I say, because it's socially acceptable to feel my hand, but it's not socially acceptable to feel my you-know-what. And like sclerosis usually happens you-know-where. And the comfrey leaf infusion gives the skin such plumpness and such integrity that it's very difficult to even say in words how it affects the skin. And it's interesting because just at that point, one of my past apprentices, Judy Henry, walked in. And I know that she also drinks her infusions, and she's a wonderful herbal teacher and just does such fabulous work. And I said, "Judy, hold out your hand. You've been drinking infusions." Yes, and this woman took her hand, and she said, "My gosh, it's just like your hand." And Judy and I looked at each other, and we went, comfrey leaf infusion. Puts you together, holds you together, and keeps you smooth, soft, and strong.
Okay, I've been using comfrey oil, harvested the way you've suggested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using the whole stalk just when it's just before it flowers or just as it flowers, and I've been using that for like 6 months. And I drink an infusion every day, and comfrey is in that the sequence of five or so that I drink, and it
You're weighing out an ounce of comfrey when you make it.
Yes, and I harvest my own. I just finished harvesting a batch recently again. So,
but you don't use it until it's dry.
Pardon me?
You don't use your comfrey for infusion until it's dry?
Correct.
I'm asking you.
Yes, I wait until it's dry.
Right, and you weigh out an entire ounce of it.
Yes.
Good. And you have seen no change of any kind?
No.
I would increase the frequency of the comfrey to 3 times a week.
Okay.
When I tore my arm off my body, I drank comfrey, maybe 8 quarts a week.
Oh.
In addition to other nourishing herbal infusions.
Okay.
And I have complete flexibility and complete strength in that arm, even though the doctor said if I didn't allow them to surgically put things back together, that couldn't happen. It did, however, take me a year to do that.
Okay.
So you say you've been doing this for a couple of months, 3 months, is that what you said?
Oh, no. The comfrey oil for a year, and the comfrey
infusions.
Once a week, I'd say for about, I've had it since last, I've had the comfrey infusion. I say I've been drinking it once a week for 6 months, regularly.
Okay. Good. So my sense is that you have set the stage for the change, and that as we increase the amount of comfrey, that since that stage has been set, it will be easy for that change to occur.
Okay, so and 3 quarts a week.
Now, but let's just backtrack a little bit, because one of the things that I often like to ask people is not just what's the problem, but what's the problem with the problem?
Everything is becoming, there's a lot of scar tissue, fusion of tissue, pain.
So one of the problems with the problem is that you're in pain.
Yes.
And one of the problems with the problem is that it interferes with your physical functioning.
Yes.
So one of the things that we can do is that we can say, who would say, I want to have pain in this place? Who would say, I want my physical function to be interfered with in this place?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I have to think about that.
Yes. Because often if we can find who would want that, we can find kind of the behind-the-scenes show.
Okay.
And have some sense of what the function is. Nothing happens to us as punishment. Things happen to us because our body in some way thinks that's the best thing to happen. So your body in some way is protecting you from something. And if we can get a sense of what it's protecting against, what it's frightened of, then we can also deal with that, because the more that we simply try to get rid of the so-called problem, the more panicked the body becomes and the more it clings to the way it has tried to protect us.
Oh. Thank you, Susan.
And I say this especially because you have been doing some work for a while, and so I think at this point that looking into yourself and bringing another part of yourself into your ability to love is something that can, in addition to more comfort, really change what's going on.
Thank you.
You are
That's
welcome.
Helpful. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, and person in the 732 area code, would you like to ask Susan a question?
Yes, I would, very much so.
Go right ahead.
Susan, you have come to me really well recommended from my sister. She lives up in Upstate New York, and she told me all about you. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I've had ovarian cancer since 2009. I went through, quite a bit of some intensive surgeries, and I'm still here. I did really well. I had a relapse 2 years ago. I've been doing really well. Suddenly, the tests and things are starting to go up a little bit. They did some CAT scans and MRIs, and they started saying something's affecting my liver now. They don't know what it is. So they want to, do some more tests and are thinking about possibly maybe if it's something else, doing more chemotherapy. So I wanted to know if there's possibly something I can do to help my liver, to help myself a little bit more than I, can know what to do.
Sure. There are a lot of herbs that really help the liver. And, some of them are things that you have to buy, and some of them are things that you could buy or you could make. But I'd like to start here because I think that this is something that you could do and that would be of benefit to you right now. And that is, and I'm reading from page 279 of Down There, women who take ginkgo biloba tincture once or twice a day for 6 months or longer are 60% less likely to have ovarian cancer or a relapse of cancer than women who never take
it.
Ginkgolides, which are special compounds found in ginkgo, kill ovarian cancer cells.
Oh, my goodness. And where would I get? Would it be like a regular tincture I could get from somewhere? I know you have special things and stuff like that.
Oh, no, I don't. I do not sell any herbs of any kind.
Well, David Winston, I think.
It's unethical to sell herbs and give advice. And I caution all of my students not to do that either. So there are a great many places providing tinctures. You can go to your local store if you want to.
Yeah.
Two of my past apprentices sell tinctures, and their businesses are Red Moon Herbs and Catskill Mountain Herbs. But those are just two of hundreds of places that you can get good quality tincture. Make
right.
sure that your tincture is made from fresh plant material.
Okay.
Now, one of the world's leading liver-loving herbs is dandelion. And just about everybody knows dandelion. I can't say everybody necessarily loves it, but most people know about dandelion. And I say that dandelion is one of the world's most generous plants. You can harvest any part of dandelion any day of the year and use it in just about any way to make a remedy that will help the liver. And dandelion is considered an anti-cancer herb.
Okay. Okay.
So,
the tincture,
you could go out if you wanted to and buy dandelion root tincture and take that. Or you could dig up your own dandelions and make your own dandelion root tincture. There's plenty of YouTubes of me making tinctures. If I'm not specifically making one from dandelion root, I know I'm making one from chicory root, so just follow along. If you don't have dandelion, chicory is another great substitute. Chicory is said to be a little cooler, and it's not considered to be quite so anti-cancer, but it's still considered to have some anti-cancer activity. And so sometimes herbalists will say, well, if someone's doing chemotherapy, it might be better for them to use the chicory root, which is a little cooler because the chemotherapy is thought of as heating, whereas the dandelion is a warmer herb. They're both wonderful for the liver. The one that you may have heard of course, is milk thistle seed tincture. And interestingly enough, all of the thistles, and that includes the one thistle whose flower bud we eat, which we call an artichoke, are wonderful allies for the liver. Milk thistle seed tincture is an item of commerce, and you can get it because seeds are already dried. It doesn't matter if it's made from fresh or dried seeds. And it's especially useful to take an hour before chemotherapy because it's hepatoprotective. It not only helps to heal the liver and strengthen the liver and nourish the liver, but it protects the liver against assault-like chemotherapy without stopping the chemotherapy from killing the cancer.
Okay.
In addition, one of the things that I really like a lot whenever anyone is dealing with any liver issue is a bit of sympathetic magic. You know what sympathetic magic is?
No, I don't.
It's magic kind of getting something by mimicking something that we want.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want a healthy liver, we would eat healthy liver.
Okay.
We eat it with the intention of it specifically making our liver healthy.
Okay. That's something I've never had is liver, other than liverwurst sandwiches.
Well, you can buy organic liver at most natural food stores, and it's often the cheapest organic meat. And many people like it with sautéed onion.
Mm-hmm.
And make it something special. Make it a healing ritual. It's not just a food. It is a food, but it's not just a food. It's a way for you to tell your body, I really want my liver to be healthy.
That's what I've been mentally trying to do with all the food that I'm consuming. Every time I sit down to eat, before I eat, I look at my food and I say, this is all healing foods. And these are all things that I had done all during my cancer treatments. And I guess I got to a point where I felt like, okay, I'm okay. You know, I don't need to do these things. And all of a sudden you realize, I need to do these things. Right? I can't stop these things because it's not something that's ever going to go away. You know, it's always possibly going to be there. But,
I think the ginkgo might just give you the edge on this.
The ginkgo biloba. Okay. Ginkgo biloba tincture twice a day, you said. Okay.
Yep.
That sounds wonderful. But I mean, I was very pleased when my doctor had called me just this morning and he told me that at least my points had went down from what they were. So I was like, okay, well, that's really good. Because I've been doing also some their meditation, they were telling me to put ice packs on my liver because it's actually cooling to the liver. I don't know how true that is. To help clear the liver of whatever problems are happening with that, too. So,
isn't that interesting that I was picking up on you wanting the cooler chicory than the warmer dandelion, too?
Right. Okay.
Green blessings.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Good night now.
Bye.
All right, Susan. I have a woman who wrote in and is asking for help by email. She said, I recently found out I'm pregnant for the second time. My first pregnancy ended in miscarriage 7 months ago, and I'm wanting to prevent that this time. I started drinking herbal infusions of red raspberry leaf, red clover, oat straw, and nettle about a month ago, drinking one quart of each once per week. I'm still drinking the nettle, but have heard conflicting information on drinking red raspberry leaf infusion. in early pregnancy. I am 4 weeks pregnant now, and my last pregnancy ended in miscarriage at 5 weeks. Is it safe to drink red raspberry infusion now or not? Will it prevent miscarriage or cause miscarriage? I've read so much conflicting information on this herb. Any information is greatly appreciated.
One of my mentors, a woman who's had a profound influence on my life, no longer with us, is Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And I said to Elizabeth one day, I said, Elizabeth, you know, I don't really understand why it is that people tend to blame themselves when bad things happen. And Elizabeth said to me, it's because if we blame ourselves for something bad happening, then we believe that we can prevent it from happening again. The fact of the matter is that approximately one-third of all women will miscarry when they're pregnant. And it's a very normal and a very natural thing to do. You don't say how old you are, but the older you are, the more normal and the more natural it is to miscarry. The very best time for a woman to get pregnant and give birth is between the ages of 15 and 25. But let's face it, there's not a lot of women in the United States right now who are giving birth in that prime time. Between the ages of 25 and 35, we're still certainly able to get pregnant pretty easily and to have babies. But the rate of miscarriage does go up a little bit in this second decade of our 3 decades of childbearing. Once we're past 35, we can still get pregnant. I've known women to get pregnant all the way up. Well, I guess there was a woman in one of my classes who got pregnant 3 years after her last menses. So that's about as late as I've ever known anyone to get pregnant. She was 57 at the time. But once we get past that 35-year mark, the rate of miscarriage goes up quite steeply. And what I understand this to be is the body's wisdom. And the body is saying, you know, it takes a lot of resources and a lot of energy to build a baby. And we don't want to build one unless it's going to be, you know, real class act here. And since the genetic material over this span of time that we're talking about, especially a women's genetic material, which is there all along, has degraded somewhat in quality. Men's genetic material degrades in quality too. The rate of birth defects, the rate of malformations goes up. And so the correct response to this is miscarriage. My very, very dear friend, who wanted very much to get pregnant, miscarried her first pregnancy at 3 months in what she called the gigantic puddle of blood at the gynecologist's office in the parking lot. She was quite upset, but she drank her red clover infusion and drank her other nourishing herbal infusions and got pregnant again. And she lost the second child as well, a miscarriage, not quite as far along. I think it was around 9 weeks that time. And she continued drinking her nourishing herbal infusions, focusing a little bit more on the red clover. And the result of her third pregnancy is 4 years old now. I have known other women to miscarry some as many as 7 or 8 times, especially those over 40, before they had a pregnancy that the body deemed good enough to keep. So, you know, the medical science says, oh, you want to be sure not to miscarry? They will actually sew your cervix shut so that you can't miscarry. But I prefer to bow to the wisdom of the body. I don't think of any woman who miscarries as having done anything wrong or necessarily as a consequence needing to do anything different or even that we can really control by what we do, whether or not we miscarry. Raspberry leaf infusion or raspberry leaf tea is a uterine tonic. The tonic effect is rather like exercise, that exercise can make muscles work better. Because of that, midwives all over the world have started a variety of different, shall we call them, superstitions about red raspberry leaf. And it is rather amusing, unless you're a woman trying to figure out what gives here. So, some midwives absolutely swear that raspberry leaf should not be drunk at all during the first 3 months of the pregnancy, lest it not induce or precipitate a miscarriage, but simply tone the uterus to the point that if a miscarriage is going to happen, it happens more easily. Just so there are other midwives, I'm sorry I have the hiccups, as you can tell, who say never to take red raspberry infusion in the last month of the pregnancy because, again, it could tone the uterus to the point where a woman who hasn't been pregnant before might mistake the getting ready contractions for real contractions and thus bring about a kind of superstition about premature labor. The fact of the matter is, under any kind of scientific scrutiny that we have done, we have not found that raspberry leaf infusion has the ability to actually cause uterine contraction, and therefore it can't actually cause mixed miscarriage and it can't actually cause premature birth. One of the places where the human mind falls down in the perhaps most obvious manner is that the human mind wants to believe that if A follows B, then B caused A. And I often say I can prove that bird singing causes the sun to rise because everywhere I have been on the planet before the sun rises, the birds sing. And yet you'd have to say, Susan, it's simply not true. The sun doesn't really rise. It's the turning of the planet that causes the illusion of the sun rising. And the sun coming up wakes the birds and the birds begin to sing. The bird singing is not causing the sun to rise. Just so, it is very easy for women who have miscarried to look back and say, well, I drank red raspberry leaf. It must have been that that caused the miscarriage. So far as we know, it simply isn't so.
Okay, thank you very much. Next question. I came across your site and have some questions about the nettle tea. I just recently got tests back, and I have a very low adrenal, thyroid, and cortisol. All the levels are very low. As I read your article on this tea, right now nutritionists made me an herb tonic with licorice, golden seal, calendula, 50 milliliters each. I would like to know from your experience if this is a good tonic. I take a half a teaspoon twice a day, followed by a half a teaspoon of sea salt. Would the nettle tea be too much with these other herbs? I also take two different pills, one for thyroid and one for adrenal, three times a day with each meal. I'm concerned that I'm adding salt to my diet. And the nettle tea is a diuretic. It might defeat the purpose of the sea salt. Please let me know what you think. Thank you.
Well, I must admit that I'm generally hesitant in situations like this to say much of anything because what I have to say is stop taking those herbs immediately. So you may not want to hear from me. Because that may be kind of too freaky for you to hear another person say, my gosh, how could somebody give you those things? That's incredibly irresponsible. Those are not herbs that are safe for you to take at all, as far as I'm concerned, and especially not in what I would call outrageously high doses. And if you tell me that the person who recommended this to you is selling this to you, then I am really going to start screaming and be really, really, really unhappy. As I've already mentioned this evening, I do not ever like to see any person who is giving advice selling any kind of herbs. It's just not an ethical thing to do. So licorice is an expectorant. It is used for coughs and bronchial catarrh, inflammation of the upper respiratory tract. It can inhibit the growth of influenza A viruses in hen embryos, but we are not sure if it actually does it in people. Licorice is used as an antiphlogistic and a spasmolytic in gastritis and stomach ulcers. This activity has been established with certainty, but full understanding has not yet been attained. Owing to the mineral corticoid activity of glycyrrhizin and glycyrrhizin, large doses lead to hypokalemia, hypernatremia, edema, hypertension, and cardiac disorder. You are taking a plant that has no particular effect on what is going on with you and that has severe side effects. I personally do not use licorice at all, and I certainly wouldn't use it in the kind of situation that you are talking about. I believe that Golden Seal was part of your formula. Golden Seal is an herb that I don't use. I have been practicing herbalist for nearly 50 years at this point, and from my first reading about Golden Seal until this very day, I find it a noxious, poisonous plant. I wanted to find out how Native people used Golden Seal, and it took me quite some years because the people that I was talking to were reluctant to tell me. And they kept telling me, we used it as a dye plant. We used it as a dye plant, which is true. Yellow Puccoon, it was a dye plant. It makes a good dye. One day, I must have just, you know, hit this woman at the right time, and she said, do you really want to know? And I said, I really, really. She said, okay. You may know that many Native American cultures made war against other Native American cultures, and you may have even heard about some of the tortures that the men did. But what is rarely written about is that the women tortured the women when we were making war. And one of the ways that we preferred to torture other women was to tie them up and prevent them from eating any food or drinking anything at all for a great many days until they were very weakened by lack of fluid and lack of food, and then to feed them fresh, raw Golden Seal root, knowing that it would cause failure of the liver, failure of the kidneys, or perforate their intestine, all three of which are absolutely horrible ways to die. Again, I've been a practicing herbalist for nearly 50 years. I have never used Golden Seal. I am extremely alarmed that you are being given Golden Seal. So far as I can tell, Golden Seal is worse than an antibiotic in the destructive damage that it does to the body. I would not, under any circumstances, take or recommend that anyone take the herbs that you are taking, and I certainly would not take them in the doses that are being recommended for you. That said, I love nettle infusion. Nettle infusion rebuilds the adrenals, and it does it in pretty short order, so long as you're not damaging the kidneys with Golden Seal or damaging the kidneys and the liver with licorice. Nettle infusion, not tea. Nettle infusion, using 1 ounce of dried nettle in a quart jar filled to the top with boiling water, tightly lidded and allowed to steep for 4 to 8 hours, is going to rebuild the adrenals and deal with all of those supposed funny measurements that you have. Excuse me. This is one of the places where it becomes difficult to talk with you when I'm not talking with you, because I want to know, what tests? Who did these tests? Was it an MD who did this test? Or was it a naturopathic doctor or a chiropractor who did these tests? I will tell you again that in all the years that I have been working, I have never seen a test that I thought was a valid test done by anyone other than an MD. So if these blood tests are showing these things that you say they're showing, and they were done by someone other than an MD, and if that someone is then telling you that you need to take certain herbs, which I consider quite dangerous herbs, and selling you those herbs, I think we have a pretty good case for quackery here. I want you to reconsider this person and whether or not you want to have anything further to do with them. Now, remember, I warned you at the very beginning of this that you probably didn't want to hear what I had to say.
Thank you, Susan. Now, I'm seeing that there are two people who have been listening for a while who have now just raised the question mark, so they'd like to ask a question. And we want to remember, Susan, that in 20 minutes, we will have a guest coming on, Emily Ruff. So I'd like you to try to budget yourself to 10 minutes on the next one so we have room for the last person as well, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Now, person in the 646 area code, can you hear me? If so, would you like to ask Susan a question?
Oh, this is Isis Phoenix. Am I on?
Yes. Would you like to ask Susan a question?
Yes.
Hi, Isis.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
Oh, just fine. I owe you a letter. You wrote me a beautiful letter, and my answer is yes to everything.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. Okay. I have a question.
Okay.
A couple of questions around St. Joan's wort.
Okay.
Recently, there was a post flying around on Facebook around natural sunscreens and natural oils that had UV protection in them. And I thought I remembered you saying that St. Joan's wort infused in olive oil was a natural sunscreen. Am I remembering that correctly?
You are.
Okay. Now, I also know that from my own experience of taking St. Joan's wort internally, I've had some photosensitivity where I burned more easily, but it also, when I put it on topically in an olive oil infused state, that it cooled that burn some. So again, I'm noticing, okay, an herb based on how it's used has, you know, different purposes. I'm wondering, what about it in the oil, if you know, makes it a sunscreen versus creates a stronger volatility to photosensitivity when we take it internally?
I have never in my life seen anyone become photosensitive from taking Hypericum, and I sincerely doubt that you have.
Okay, thank you.
The only instances of that are people taking the powdered herb in capsules.
Aha. Okay, so I probably...
And how you were taking it?
No, I was taking it in a tincture that I harvested myself.
Absolutely no way to become photosensitive from the tincture.
Thank you so much. So I can stop blaming St. Joan
for that extra sensitive sunburn when it was probably just me riding my bike out on the street too long.
I would say so.
Okay.
I don't know if you've been listening, but I was just talking about how poorly the human brain does with cause and effect.
Yes, I know.
It's one of the reasons that we do double-blind scientific studies. I mean, for what, nearly 50 years, modern medicine said that taking hormones prevents heart attacks. But when we actually did a double-blind study, we found just the opposite was true, that taking hormones actually slightly increases the risk of a heart attack. For women, during and after menopause.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, you know that when we think there's a cause and effect that we don't know. Now, it may be that the olive oil that the Hypericum is in is the reason that it works. Olive oil itself, it turns out, blocks ultraviolet radiation and is a fairly effective sunscreen. So it might not be the Hypericum. However, it does have a reputation going back over 600 years as being a cure for burns, which you have also said that when you put it on the sunburn, it definitely cools and heals that burn. So it may be that there's a kind of dual action going on there, that the olive oil is protecting against the ultraviolet radiation, and that if there's any slight reddening of the skin that's occurring, that the Hypericum in the oil is cooling and helping that not to burn.
Got that.
Now I know that you teach yoga, Isis. Would you teach any yoga class with only forward bends?
Oh, no, never, no.
No, because we want yin and yang.
Yes.
So we see always in the yin and yang that when we get to the greatest yang, there is some yin, and when we get to the greatest yin, there is some yang. And so one of the ways that the plants reflect this is that Hypericum, which grows out in the sun, if we put it on our bodies, helps us to be in the sun like it can be in the sun and not get harmed by it. But if we put it in our body, we bring the sun into ourselves and make ourselves warmer.
Okay. Okay.
And I know that you work with that principle of yin and yang, and you understand how yin flows into yang, and yang flows into yin, and that while they may be opposites, they are complementary opposites. And just so, using an herb on the outside of our body will often have a very different effect than using that herb inside our body.
Mm, yes, indeed.
Right? Mm. So we would say that a man's body is yang, it's hard. Whereas a woman's body is yin, it's soft. Most men like to sit in soft chair or hard chair.
Soft chair.
Right. They want the opposite. Most women like to sit in soft chair or hard chair.
I'm going to say hard chair, although I go back and forth.
I'm sitting right here in an oak office chair, my preference.
Okay.
Right? It's yin and yang in the constant flow as it moves from
one
to the other. This
mm-hmm.
is what we call synergy in herbs. This is why we like herbs and not drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Extension of my St. Joan's wort question.
Okay.
Building some resources for safer sex practices, also around people who have a sexually transmitted infection and also supporting their body when they have certain outbreaks. St. Joan's wort, I understand, is one of the most powerful antivirals known on the planet right now. In my opinion, and also in the research and what I also see you supporting and putting out there, I know sometimes you've spoken about...
I think it's a good antiviral, but I don't think I would say it's the most powerful one.
Thank you for clarifying.
That's good.
I wonder... I know you've spoken about that there have been some scientific studies where St. Joan's wort has killed the HIV virus in a petri dish. And I'm wondering if you know the names of those studies or have any additional information where I could get more information on that as I'm putting together these lists.
No.
Okay.
No, I certainly don't keep those things in my mind.
Okay.
I read very widely. I read Scientific American. I read Science News. I read Nature. You know, it's a huge amount of information coming in, Herbalgram, just lots and lots and lots of stuff. So, well, how wonderful that we have the Internet and you can put in some keywords and see what you come up with.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much, Susan. I also just wanted to give one shout out too for oat straw for increasing vaginal lubrication. I know you received a testimonial that you quoted in your Down There book on it about turning a dry desert into the Sahara, into the Nile. And I must say, after taking 3 weeks of oat straw, I actually had to stop because I was just soaking through my clothes. There was so much vaginal lubrication. So I want to contribute my testimony to the powerful effects of oat straw as women's internal lubricant that moves very quickly to an external lubricant. So thank you for putting that out there. And it is tried, tested, and true.
Yay. And Isis, if you have a moment to give me a call tomorrow during office day, we can arrange about the things you were asking about in your letter.
Perfect. I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Wonderful. I love you, honey.
All right. Love you, too. Thanks so much, Susan.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Person in the 647 area code, if you have a question for Susan, you're welcome to ask her.
Hello, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hi, Susan. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. We've got 10 minutes.
Okay, well, actually, I just have a really quick question. I've been making infused oil with comfrey for quite a while, a few years, and it tends to have a smell to it, which I didn't ever really think was a bad smell. But My dad broke his leg, and I gave him some, and he says to him it smells off. But I was just wondering, does comfrey have that odd smell to it in making it in a good olive oil?
When you say a good olive oil, do you mean extra virgin olive oil?
Yes. Like a cold pressed.
I never use extra virgin olive oil to infuse plants.
Oh, okay, okay.
I use pure olive oil.
Okay. Just pure olive oil, okay.
The extra virgin olive oil has flavor and color compounds that can interact with the plants and cause the whole oil to smell or look very odd.
Okay.
Secondly, comfrey is definitely a difficult plant to work with, and often when we make comfrey leaf oil, which I will tell you truthfully, I hardly ever make. I far prefer plantain oil, which is much easier to make. We will pour the pure olive oil over the comfrey leaf and let it sit for 3 weeks, and then pour that oil over a fresh jar of comfrey leaf.
Okay. Okay. So over. Okay.
So,
okay.
Nor have I ever heard of comfrey ointment being of any use at all in healing a broken bone.
Okay.
There might be some placebo effect. There might be some you know, magical effect. There might be some thought effect. I'm not saying you can't have an effect by wishing for it. You can, but you really want to help heal that bone. You need to be drinking comfrey leaf infusion. He needs to be drinking comfrey leaf infusion.
I'm trying to get him, but I'm trying to get him.
Family is the last.
To do that, but
family's the last people to hear you. You get him to eat yogurt.
That seems to be true. Pardon me?
Can you get him to eat yogurt?
Yes.
Good. If he'll eat a quart of yogurt every week, that will help his bone heal.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
So with this comfrey oil, that should I just throw it out and start again with the pure oil?
Why would you throw it out?
Other,
it sounds like you're comfortable with it. Why don't you use it?
I am. Okay, that's good. I use it for my skin and stuff all the time, and I don't mind the smell. So I was just wondering if maybe it was off and I didn't really put two and two together because there was never mold
is
or
off.
Anything on it.
Oh, what?
Okay.
You're not eating it.
No. Okay.
And if you don't mind how it smells, then there's no problem.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Susan.
You are welcome.
Have a great night.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Green blessings.
So,
well, it was a short question. We still have 5 more minutes before Emily Ruff, unless Emily's already here.
Yes, we do. No, I'm looking, and I don't see Emily's phone line called in yet. So let's see if we can squeeze in another one of these email questions. They're just piling up like a big mountain here. And I'm picked one that's kind of on topic of what you've been discussing tonight. So here we go. I hope you don't mind me asking a few questions about Vitex. I met with a doctor while on vacation on Cyprus, and doctor works as an MD and an ND. I recently started taking Ciprolex antidepressant past the month prescribed by my doctor here in Sweden for my PMS. In fact, I only have one good week a month. During the last 10 years, I've tried many natural methods and nothing has helped, including a 6-month treatment with an excellent TCM doctor. The doctor in Cyprus recommended Vitex in tincture form that I could try to take half of the Ciprolex while trying out the Vitex. I keep finding conflicting information on dosage. I'm turning 40 in August and had a baby almost 3 years ago. I've suffered from PMDD since I hit puberty. I'm working hard on stress management and eat a clean diet. Do you have any tips on when during the cycle I should start and how often I should take breaks on the Vitex? Best wishes.
Well, I don't actually like to come in on other people's recommendations. This is the second time this evening that I have said that. And so if somebody else is recommending that you take something, they should tell you how much they think you should take, not me, because they're the ones who are recommending it. And it's not what I would recommend. In my book, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, I talk about an American herb called Senecio aureus. The common name is life root. Now, I know that red moon herbs makes life root tincture, and it is, to my mind, the single best herb for women dealing with the kinds of problems that you are dealing with. As I said, it's an American herb, so it's not necessary that the people that you are seeing, the person you're seeing, would even know about it, although there are forms of it that grow in Europe. The American one is Senecio aureus life root. In Germany, there is Senecio vulgaris, which is Gemeines Krauskraut. And also in Europe is Senecio jacobea, Jacob's Kraut. Although the Senecios have a pretty bad reputation for poisoning livestock, they are of the utmost importance in helping women who have any kind of menstrual distress. Many authors warn against their use, but I have seen nothing but favorable results so long as small doses of the tincture are used, and the tincture is made from the fresh blossoms, not from the root. Life root and groundsel are classic tonics and have a far greater effect over the long term than is a quick-acting remedy. Commit to daily use for 2 weeks out of each month for at least 2 to 3 months before expecting to see results. So the tincture of flowering Senecio aureus, which I believe is available from red moon herbs and possibly from other sources as well, made from the fresh flowers of the plant, taken 5 drops a day from the point of ovulation until the point of menstruation within 2 to 3 months, should not only relieve your premenstrual pain, the PMD, but should also brighten your mood as well. So far as I know, the tincture of the flower of this plant, taken in the small doses that we are talking about, will not interfere with any other drug that you're taking.
Thank you. Susan, I think I have one more person here who wants to ask a question, and we're going to make some room for them to do that. In the 732 area code, if you have a question for Susan, please go ahead and ask.
Is there somebody in the 732 area code? Can you hear us? Can you talk to us?
Okay. Well, maybe they accidentally pressed the number one button. That happens sometimes. Oh, hi.
Oh.
Do you have a question
for
Susan?
Hi. I'm sorry about that. I do. I have been taking red clover in an infusion to help with anxiety that I have. And one of the major problems that I'm finding with doing this is that it's time-consuming to do the infusion with my 3 children underfoot, and also I travel a lot. So I was wondering if she might have a suggestion for an alternative for that.
It's true that life is time-consuming. Cooking your own meals is time-consuming, too. But on
yes.
the other hand, we have to ask ourselves, what do we want to do with our time? Now, I'll tell you personally what I do is I put the water up to boil for my infusion, and while it's boiling, I brush my teeth. It's something I need to do anyhow. So I'm certainly not taking any extra time out of my day. Weighing out the herb takes me less than 1 minute. Putting it in the jar is part of that less than 1 minute. putting the water up to boil. Again, I have not even used 60 seconds now. The water is heating. I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth. The kettle whistles. I go in. I turn off the stove. I pour the boiling water into the jar, and I screw a lid on it. I do not see that this takes much time at all. I'm sure that with three children that you are cooking the vast majority of your meals. And so when you're in the kitchen boiling water for pasta or cooking something else, why not just make a nourishing herbal infusion? One of the things that I've seen Justine do is to set up 7 or 8 half-gallon jars and put 2 ounces of nettle, 2 ounces of red clover, 2 ounces of oat straw, 1 ounce of linden flowers, and put, you know, the right amount of herb in each of those half-gallon jars, and then boil a big pot of water. And you can set a timer and do something fun with your kids while the water is boiling, and then come and fill all of those jars up, glup, 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 put lids on them, and when they cool, stash them in the refrigerator. And so long as the jar isn't open, those infusions will actually stay fresh for much longer. Once the jar is open, the infusion does need to be drunk up within usually about 36 to 48 hours. But if the jar isn't open, it will often stay good for a week or even more. In this way, you can make all of your nourishing herbal infusion for the entire week in less than an hour and spend most of that hour as playtime with your children. And depending on how old your children are, they can help you weigh out the herb. That's a great job to do with children. They like to play with the herb. It's good to get those numbers in there with the smaller ones, with the older ones. We can even talk about we put in 1 ounce per quart. This is 2 quarts, so we're going to put in 2 ounces and get some numeracy going there. I was once teaching a workshop, and an MD in the workshop said, well, Susan, this all sounds well and good about working with these nourishing herbal infusions, but I work with, you know, welfare moms, and they just don't have the time to do this. And I was very blessed. A woman in class stood up, and she said, I'm a welfare mom, and I have 4 children, and I want you to know that I cook all of the meals for all of us, and I wouldn't pass a single day without our nourishing herbal infusions. It takes a little time, but it's time well spent, and I'd certainly rather spend the time making nourishing herbal infusions that we all drink than taking my kids to the doctor.
Well, of course. I had been told that I could only make one infusion at a time of the red clover is what I'm talking about, and that it had to be drank within 2 days and not to make more than I could drink within 2 days and store it because it would go bad being protein rich. So now knowing that I can make more of it at a time and store it in my fridge, I think would be greatly helpful to me.
Good.
So thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
Hey there. All right.
As is Emily here?
I don't know. Hold on just a moment. I just have to get back to the screen here.
Yeah.
It's called what you were talking to her.
Oh, that's an annoying sound. There's lots of these, you can all have some. I wonder if there's anyone at all here. Is Justine here? Is Emily here?
Emily's
are any of the
here?
Listeners here? Ah, there's somebody. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Emily. Can you hear me?
Hey, I can hear you, Emily.
Okay, great.
Good.
Hi. I was
is that
disconnected, but I was disconnected, so I just had to get back on. I want to give, at least I would like to share Emily's bio with the group, if that's all right.
Okay.
Okay, so Emily Ruff, as Susan mentioned, is the director of the Florida School of Holistic Living, and she's a practicing herbalist. She lives in Orlando, Florida, where she runs an herbal product company called Orenda Herbal. She is also director of the Florida Herbal Conference and has traveled the world studying indigenous traditions of plant healing. So we're very excited to have Emily here. You only have 30 minutes, but enjoy.
Thanks, Justine.
Actually, at this point, it looks like we only have 25. And, Emily, they are going to cut us off at the end of the time. It's the end of the time, and they just cut us right off. So I am thrilled to have this opportunity to speak with you and to share you with all of the listeners here at my Susan Weeds Blog Talk radio show. Thank you much, Justine. Thank you for being here and helping to move the questions along and helping me. And thanks for introducing Emily. You are a really vital and important part of our Blog Talk radio show.
You are welcome. Good night, and I love you.
Good night. I love you too, honey.
Good night.
So, Emily, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background and how you came to do all these exciting and interesting things?
Sure. Thanks, Susan, and thanks again. It's an honor to be with you this evening. And I have been fortunate that I grew up around the plants. My father was a botanist, and my grandfather was an urban farmer. So from a very young age, I had my fingers in the soil and was learning about the plants that were growing around me. And as a young adult, I, after dealing with a lot of health issues as a child, ended up traveling to Guatemala simply for the adventure of it, not realizing that everything that I knew about health would change during that experience. While I lived there, I had the fortune of working with a local doctor who practiced medicine completely different from any of the doctors I had seen growing up, and really taught me a lot about the emotional, spiritual components of health, and also about the bounty of medicine that most of us have growing around us right outside of our, you know, back doors and our gardens and in the fields. And so when I returned to the United States, I apprenticed with two amazing herbalists, George Darcy here in Central Florida and then Rosemary Gladstar up in Vermont, as well as continuing to study with lots of other herbalists through conferences and workshops, and have just had the great fortune of sitting at the feet of so many wise women and wise men who like you, have held open these teachings for generations like mine to have the good fortune to learn from. So I live in Orlando, Florida now, and I have a private practice as well as working with a school here, the School of Holistic Living, where we have an herbalist training program and a student clinic, as well as lots of workshops and a teaching garden for our general community here to enjoy.
You also hold a herbal conference there, and you have, thank you so much, invited me to come next year, the beginning of next year. I think it's, what, February 28th to March 2nd of 2014. Tell
That's
us
right.
more about the Florida Herbal Conference.
Yes, ma'am. So the Florida Herbal Conference was really an inspiration from many of my teachers to work towards building a more cohesive community of herbalists here in the state of Florida, because we're so far south, many of the herbalists here aren't necessarily connected or networked in with those networks in the Southeast and New England and the Midwest that have been growing and building for the past few decades. And so it was amazing a few years ago to start to kind of poke around the state and realize that there was a lot of herbal activity going on, but most of us weren't really linked. Most of us didn't really know one another. And so 2 years ago, in 2012, we held our first Florida Herbal Conference, and we had about 300 people join us, 30 teachers from around the state of Florida. And then we also had Rosemary Gladstar come down and join us for that event as a guest speaker. And last year, we grew a little bit. We had 350 participants. We had Matthew Wood and Phyllis Light join us to share their wisdom. And then this year, we're really delighted to have both you and herbalist David Winston as our guest speakers to continue the tradition of the past few years of sharing and growing with our herbal community. And it's been really beautiful to watch the state community, build a stronger network and a stronger allegiance with one another, and also to see people from various regions within the state of Florida meet each other for the first time through this conference, from, you know, not knowing each other from their local communities, but building some bonds at our conference and taking those back to their cities and to their towns and continuing to do that good work of building a stronger community. So it's really an honor of ours here at the school to be able to hold space, and especially an honor for us to have some amazing guests like you sharing with us here in the South.
Well, I'm very excited to hear that I'm going to be there with David Winston, and brings up this very cherished memory that I have of being out at Brighton Bush about, oh goodness, at least 30 years ago, possibly even longer. And it was the full moon there, and nobody seemed to be doing anything about the full moon. So I thought, well, I have my drum with me. I'm going to go up this kind of mountainish thing. Of course, it wasn't like a huge mountain. It was more like a little hill. I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to drum to the full moon. And I come up, and I'm sitting there, and I'm drumming to the full moon. And then it's very odd. I think I hear another drum. And on the other side of this little hill, David Winston has similarly climbed this hill because nobody's paying any attention to the full moon. And he's drumming to the full moon. And so I hear him drumming, and he hears me drumming. And we both get up and walk toward each other drumming. And it was the, you know, beginning of a wonderful relationship between David Winston and I. And so everybody who comes to the Florida Herbal Conference is going to get to see the next chapter of that. David and I, at this point, are so busy that we haven't had an opportunity to really teach directly together, but maybe we'll do a walk together or some way, really interact together, because we were just together at the International Herb Symposium, but of course, he was teaching his classes, I was teaching mine, and we were lucky to even get to say, hi, bye, good to see you, looking good, uh-huh. We actually did go on a little teacher's walk together. So,
that's great.
You said that in Florida, that you don't have some of the plants that other people have. And then again, you have some plants that we all want, like saw palmetto, which I was just talking about tonight. Do you have some strictly Florida herbs that are your, like, that you want to talk about or that your favorites?
Oh, sure. Well, of course, saw palmetto is one that comes up a lot in conversation, especially with my colleagues that live in more northern climates, because we are so fortunate to grow that plant here in Florida. And, you know, just an amazing plant. Really not sure what we would do for the men in our lives treating prostate enlargement, at least here in our state, without this beautiful, beautiful plant. And there's so many other tropicals.
It's fabulously
helpful
for women, too.
Absolutely, absolutely, indeed.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, we're just always finding creative ways to tincture it and extract it and work with it and dry it and use it. I just recently heard that William Bartram called it a mix of a flavor that tasted a bit like rotting cheese soaked in fermented tobacco juice. And I think that that really does kind of describe this unique sense that that plant has.
It
has so
flavor that anybody would say, hey, I want some more of that. But it is much moderated by tincturing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's just a really delightful one in this, in September and October months. That plant is in fruit, and so it's a perfect time of year. The weather from the summer is finally moderating down a bit and a little bit cooler, a little bit easier to get outside and harvest that. So that's just one of our beautiful plants, as well as, you know, a lot of our other tropical plants, things that a lot of times we think about as fruits, like papaya and, you know, the avocados, and those not only have a lot of healthful benefits in the foods and the fruits that they provide, but, you know, even using them as herbs, I mean, thinking about like eye conditions like pink eye and sty, I'm not sure where I would be without papaya leaves in my practice. And so with those types of things, and then gingers and cayennes and a lot of plants, which many of my herbal friends in the north can grow in greenhouses or in the summertime kind of as an annual. And those are the plants that we have here growing around us in such abundance. So it really is unique. You know, we don't necessarily have a climate that supports growing chamomile all year round, or, you know, we find plantain growing outside, but in very, very seasonal, sort of the winter months of the year, the cool months of the year. We have a little bits of dandelion as well in the winter time, but Florida is unique because it's such a long state that we have really three microclimates. So our northern Florida friends can grow a lot more of the temperate herbs. Our southern Florida friends in Miami and the Keys can primarily grow strictly tropical plants. And then where I live in Orlando, in the middle of the state, sort of have a mix of subtropical. So in the winter, I can grow some temperate. In the summer, my tropicals thrive. So it's really quite a unique climate. And when we have our conference at the end of February, beginning of March, we are still in what we consider winter here in Florida, but generally the temperatures are, you know, in the 60s, maybe inching into the 70s. So much different kind of winter that we experience here in Florida. So I'm hopeful that you'll get a bit of sunshine rays when you come to visit us compared to the winters that you may get up in New York.
Oh, my New York winters are incredibly sunny. I have a tremendous amount of solar gain. This is a great place for passive solar, and I so prefer the cold climate. I'm actually giving up one of my favorite things, which is some part of the winter to come and be someplace where I will be somewhat uncomfortable because it will be too hot for me.
A little warm. Well, we thank you for being so generous. And
you are welcome. Don't think that I'm coming there because I would willingly give up any minute of the winter. I love the winter.
Wow.
The colder it is, the happier I am. I am a real, you know, take me out in the snow. Wow, I love it. And ooh, I just kind of, you know, don't much care to go where it is warm. I had a friend who was diagnosed with cancer, and what he chose to do for it was papaya leaf tea. Have you ever heard of that with your papaya leaf?
Mm-hmm. I sure have. I sure have. And how was his experience with that?
His experience was great. He didn't die of the cancer, which the doctor said was metastasized throughout his entire body. Matter of fact, he survived the cancer for 2 years and then had a heart attack.
Oh, goodness. I'm glad to hear that being used in cancer.
And, you know, he was able to harvest the leaves from papaya trees that he had planted. So it was a really nice kind of circle there. And they would make it pretty strong. They would, like, you know, boil up some water and put that couple of papaya leaves in it and let it, like, sit all day long before he'd drink it. Is that how you use it?
Yes, it's a strong infusion. Mm-hmm, absolutely. And then I find a lot of practical applications for it as a poultice, as I mentioned, for the eyes, but also, you know, if you don't have the fortune of having the yarrow or the plantain growing in your yard as a weed, then papaya here is one that we often will use as a poultice in the case where we may otherwise call upon those two beautiful herbs.
Yes, and it is so easy to grow papaya where you are.
Oh, absolutely.
I remember
helping
him stick those papaya seeds in the little pots, and wow, before you knew it, there was a whole grove of papaya trees there.
That's the truth. You know, the first time I grew papaya trees ended up being quite by accident, having the leftovers of a papaya that I had put into my compost pile. And before I knew it, like you said, I had a grove of papaya trees coming out of my compost. So
excellent.
I was able to gift them to the whole neighborhood.
Yes, you hardly ever get just one papaya. And of course, you don't want one because they're male trees and female trees.
That's right.
And if you want to actually get a papaya, you got to have some both kinds of trees.
That's right.
Now,
mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that really makes me feel very connected to you is that we both teach classes that have moon in the name. So am I wrong to think that your moon medicine class has something to do with women?
You know, it does have something to do with women, and it also, you know, really has something to do with men. In my moon medicine class, which I've offered at some of the women's conferences, obviously, you know, we like to highlight, especially at those events, the amazing connection that we as women have biologically and physiologically with the cycles of the moon. And in that class, I also talk about how all of us living on this planet have some really distinct connections with the lunar phases, the lunar cycles, and how for, you know, thousands of years our ancestors have really called upon those energies to enhance their gardening practices, germinating seeds, harvesting their medicines, making their medicines.
So it's, of course, you know, amazing when we can really think about how women can become in attunement and alignment with the moon. But, you know, men find, too, that there is some ebb and flow to their life, and that by attuning to those energies, they feel a little bit more aligned, too, especially those that are, you know, tilling the soil, working out in the gardens, harvesting the medicine, too. So,
at the International Herb Symposium, there was at least one person, if not several, doing similar things, talking about, you know, harvesting herbs and making preparations in alignment with the moon and where the sun was in the certain signs. And somebody asked me, you know, if I did any of that, and I laughed, and I said, you know, where I live, if I did any of that at all, I might be able to harvest nettle once in 10 years, or make a hypericum tincture once in 20 years.
Absolutely.
I have to work.
Yeah.
And wherever the moon is, or whatever the sun is doing, good luck. But I'm certainly not paying any attention to it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because the
weather is
much more important than any of the moon stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I find that there are definitely, especially here in Florida, you know, we have our rainy season comes and it's pretty much rain, 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 and we're kind of, you know, squeezing in our garden time and our harvest time around those long, long storms. So there's definitely, you know, looking at how we can integrate and, you know, bring those two pieces together is definitely different in each climate and different here in Florida with each season, too.
Exactly. And I find much of that moon lore has to do with far more temperate regions. And so mm-hmm. for you to plant your, say your mint, you know, when the sun is in a certain sign, if that information is coming from Northern Europe, it's not going to work at all for you in Florida.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. In Florida, it's culturally very interesting to look at both the plants that grow here and the medicine traditions that remain alive here, because we have, you know, such a melting pot. Many of the early indigenous tribes that lived in Florida and practiced plant medicine in Florida were either pushed out or were, you know, killed by disease. And then we had the Creek, which we now call the Seminole, that sort of migrated down from the Carolinas, but really they, the further south that they were pushed by the wars, were learning, you know, a whole new plant region, a plant apothecary. And then we have many, many people that have moved here from the islands, and we have a lot of plants that have established themselves here from Africa and from Asia and from the Middle Americas. And so we really have this melting pot of herbal traditions here, because many of the weeds that we have growing now very readily in this community are weeds from the Caribbean islands and weeds from India, weeds from China. So I look a lot to those traditions to also inform the work that we do and try to learn the practices that they implemented, because it's really their herbs now that we see in our backyards here, which is kind of interesting. It's much, much fewer of the European herbs do we have growing here in our region, so looking to some of those other traditions and see how they work with the plants has been really a great source of not only inspiration but also practical information for us looking how to integrate that.
So you're a melting pot place for a lot of people and a lot of plants coming in from the Caribbean islands, from Cuba, Jamaica, Puerto Rico, all in through there, and even from Africa as
mm-hmm.
well, more tropical areas of the world, and China, too, bringing their weeds to you.
Mm-hmm.
And how wonderful,
yeah.
Absolutely wonderful that is. Yeah, I think about a plant that I first learned in southern Florida, which I was introduced to, is strongback. And thinking back on it, I haven't thought about this plant, gosh, for maybe 15 years. I think it might be a Malvaceae. It's kind of low-growing and has a yellow flower. And then when I went to Jamaica, and I was teaching in Jamaica, and somebody in the class said, well, do you know about this plant called strongback? And I said, yes, I've been introduced to it, and I think I can find it. I think I saw some yesterday. And so we were walking kind of along the road, and there was a little one because it's an edge plant. It likes to grow along the edges of roads. And I said, okay, so this is it. And she said, well, is that it over there? And I said, oh, yes, it's a much bigger one. And we kind of walked, you know, across what looked like kind of a vacant lot with a pile of garbage on it, I must admit. And then she said, oh, well, look, there's a big one over there. When we got to the big one over there, from the pile of garbage, a person emerged, because, of course, it was not a pile of garbage. It was a person's house. And he said, what are you all doing here, right? And we said, well, we're looking at strongback. And he said, oh, those are little strongbacks. And he grabbed his machete and he said, follow me. And off he went into the bush, hacking things down as we went, to a really big strongback plant. And he told us his name was Mr. Beeline. If we'd come every day at dawn, he'd take us out on an herb walk in Jamaica, and he surely did. It was quite amazing.
That's a beautiful story.
Do you have any strongback there?
Yes, we do. You know, in Orlando, we don't see it quite as much, but definitely as you get maybe an hour or two south from here, definitely in the southern tip of Florida and in the Keys, you see it, you know, really, really prevalent down there. And the butterflies and the hummingbirds and the birds just flock to it when it's in flower and when it's in fruit. So it's just a beautiful plant down there that really supports a lot of the wildlife.
Is it a Malvaceae?
I understand maybe it to be in the borage family, but I could
it's
certainly be incorrect
family.
About that one.
Well, of course, he dug one up and gave us this strongback root. He said, this is the part to use, just boil it up. So we boiled it up and left it, you know, back at the ranch, as it were, where we were staying, and went out on a horseback ride. And wouldn't you know it, one of the women fell off the horse. And
oh,
all the Jamaicans gathered around and said, oh, you better take her to the hospital. And, of course, I said, oh, no, we're not going to take her to the hospital. We're going to give her strongback. And they were just totally wowed that, A, we knew what strongback was, and, B, that we already had some brewing back at the place and could take her back there and give her the right herb. Isn't life beautiful that way?
Of course.
Well, Emily, we have come to the last couple of minutes of our opportunity to talk together. And I like to reserve this last little bit of time for whoever it is that I am talking to, and ask you, what do you want to leave the listeners thinking about? And, very important, if they want to find out about the Florida School of Holistic Living, or they want to find out about the Florida Herbal Conference, how do people find out about those things?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Susan. And again, thanks for having me tonight, and thanks to all of your listeners for tuning in. And I just want to invite all of you, when you have the moment from the other parts of the world that you may reside in, if you happen to find your way down to the south, give us a visit in sunny Florida. We'd love to have our friends from all over come to explore the unique climate and the unique plants that we have to offer here. And we would especially love if you wanted to join us with Susan's visit as well at the end of February 2014 for the Florida Herbal Conference. The website for that event is floridaherbalconference.org, and there's a whole bunch of information about the event. It's held at a beautiful campsite, and actually it will be held over the weekend of the new moon, and we will be drumming with the new moon on that Saturday evening around a big, beautiful fire. So we'll have lots
of herbs.
You mean
David and I won't have sneak off with our drums to celebrate
the
moon?
That's right. We will be welcoming you in style with our drums, and that's been a beautiful tradition we've shared with our conference attendees for the past few years, is drumming around that fire. And just so happens this year we'll be celebrating the new moon, so it will be a beautiful dark sky. We'll have lots of stars to see and just, you know, glorious evening to share along with all of the other herbal classes and workshops that will be present there. So I certainly invite your listeners to check out that event and join us for that. And there is also the website for the school in Orlando. Should you be in our area, we'd love to have you visit us here and check out our beautiful herb teaching garden. And our website is holisticlivingschool.org, and that's the Florida School of Holistic Living, holisticlivingschool.org. And you can see many of the classes, both the ones that I offer as well as the rest of our faculty here at the school. As well, we have a seed library, a teaching garden, as I mentioned, so lots of fun things to check out if you're in the neighborhood. And I'll also leave your listeners with my website, which is emilyruff.com, and you can find links to all of my happenings and goings and all the projects I have my fingers in there, as well as articles that I publish, and so you can learn a little bit more about me and the work that I do at that site.
And I think that's EmilyRuff, Emily Ruff. And that's Emily Ruff dot...
EmilyRuff.com.
EmilyRuff.com. Okay, and what... You have 90 seconds to leave the listeners with whatever you would like to leave them with.
Well, thank you to your listeners for saying yes to the call of the plants, knocking on the doors of their hearts and being interested in this work and holding this work open and sharing this work with future generations. And especially thank you to Susan for being such a bright candle in this field and being such a leader for us and an inspiration for all of us. And big gratitude for all of you out there who are working with the plants. This is such an important time to be doing this work and to be, you know, communicating and communing with the plant world. And they are very grateful, I feel, as well. And just very honored to be doing this work alongside all of you. And I look forward to meeting some of you, hopefully in Florida soon. Thank you so much, you guys.
We're all gals. Thank you so much, Emily Ruff, from the Florida School of Holistic Living. And thank you, listeners, for being here with me, Susan Weed, as we reweave the healing cloak of the ancients and reclaim herbal medicine as people's medicine. Green blessings until next week. Join me, Susan Weed, at Blog Talk Radio.
Good night.